Welcome to Wealthability, where we're always learning how to make way more money and pay way less taxes. This is Tom Wheelwright, your host, founder, and CEO of Wealthability. What if you never had to worry about a lawsuit? What if you never had to worry about a lawsuit? Today, you're going to learn how to protect your assets from partners and predators. Now, we spend a lot of time in our tax courses talking about protecting your money from politicians. That's called tax planning. Now we're going to talk about protecting it from everybody else, your partners, and especially predators. First thing to remember is that when you have wealth, you become a target. When you have wealth, you become a target. And you become a target to people you don't even know you're a target. Okay? You know, we all know that there's the lawyers out there who, you know, the personal injury lawyers, and we all know they're out to get our wealth. They're not the ones I'm talking about. We're going to protect from them. We also need to protect from your partners, all right? Your partners are the most likely people to steal from you. Once again, your partner, your business partner, your investment partner is the most likely person to steal from you. The next most likely person to steal from you is your bookkeeper, all right? It's your bookkeeper. So when you look at protecting your wealth, you have to focus on the idea that if somebody's going to steal your money, they need two things. Number one, they need a motive. Now, when it comes to a personal injury lawyer, we know their motive, right? They always have motive. They're upfront with their motive. Their motive, I saw a billboard the other day. It said the advertisement had, you know, been an accident, whatever, call big money. Big money. That was their phone number. It's big money. So we know what their motive is. The challenge is we don't know what the motive is of a partner or a bookkeeper. We don't know what their motive is. So we can never control for motive. We might have somebody who's a good partner for 15 years or a great bookkeeper. Bookkeepers are really, I think, partners are challenging, but partners you have that constant interaction with. And anyway, partners we deal with differently. Bookkeepers particularly, though, they might be perfectly honest for 15 years. And then one day their motive changes, right? Their motive changes because now they're looking at a husband or a wife with a medical issue, and their insurance doesn't cover it, okay? They need to come up with $2,000. Well, what do they see? They see that you have money. You have money. So when they see your money, they're going, oh, well, they can afford it. I'll just borrow it from them. I will borrow it from them, and I will pay them back. And it always starts that way. I'll borrow them, pay them back. And normally, they do pay you back the first time, the second time. By the third time, what they're realizing is you aren't noticing it. You aren't noticing it. And then they start justifying. Humans are really good at justification for their actions. We are really good at that. So they start justifying. They say, well, look, I've been doing this for so long, and they make so much money, and I make so little money, and you know, I'm such an important part of the business, and they can't live without me, and they really owe this to me. And they're embarrassed. See, what they were embarrassed to ask you for the money. They're embarrassed to borrow, to ask you for a loan. They're embarrassed to ask you for money, right? So they go and they steal it. Well, they couldn't steal it if they didn't have the opportunity. They couldn't steal it if they didn't have the opportunity. So the very first thing you have to do with partners and bookkeepers is to control the opportunity. Now, bookkeeper is much easier to control, okay? So a bookkeeper should never have unfettered access to your bank account, ever, okay? Now, you might one thing you could do is you can transfer a certain, you know, they, here's what they do. They can have the bills, right? They can actually send you the bills, right? You approve the bills. You know how much it is. You might have a separate bank account that is equal exactly to those bills, right? And that's what they pay from, right? So you don't literally have to write the check. You should. I mean, I prefer that you write the check, right? I prefer that you do that. At a minimum, though, you should approve the bills and only approve the payment of that amount, all right? Second of all, we always need to have more than one person involved, all right? Now, collusion, which is when two people or more are involved in a dishonorable act, a theft, for example, is very rare. It's actually very rare, and it's almost impossible to control for. So what you do instead is you make sure that there are two people. Now, again, if it's your partner and your bookkeeper, that could be a challenge. I would actually prefer two different employees than a partner and a bookkeeper, frankly, because controlling your partner can be really, really difficult, right? Because they do have authority. They have authority. So it's much more difficult. You know, it's very difficult to put a partner in prison. They have to be actually stealing from you, right? Rather than just making bad decisions. And it's very hard to fire a partner. It's much easier to fire a bookkeeper. So my point is that I would prefer to have two employees that are involved. At a minimum, though, two people. If it's a partner, it's a partner. All right. So the way we solve for opportunity is what we call, well, we solve for opportunities. It's called internal controls. Okay. Those are internal controls. And when you want to protect your wealth from internal people, you put in internal controls, right? These are people like your bookkeeper, your partner, etc. You put in internal controls. Again, as I've mentioned in other training sessions, we trust people and we verify. So remember that you cannot delegate your responsibility for your wealth to anybody. And that includes a partner, all right? So you need to be looking at the financial statements. Even if they're responsible for the financial statements, you must look at them. You must understand the financial statements. You must look at that, you know, kind of highlight. You know, people are going to steal from you. They are. What you want to do is keep it to a minimum. You just want to keep the amount low so that you can verify and you know, once you and catch it, right? You can verify and catch it before it gets too big. Now, the most important thing we can do in this area is what we call a control environment. Now, a control environment is like this. Let me use a saying. It's one of my favorite sayings that comes from Harbecker and Blair Singer. I've heard them use over and over again. The way you do anything is the way you'll do everything. The way you do anything is the way you'll do everything. And employees see that as well, as do partners. So if you cheat on your taxes, you may cheat somewhere else. If you cheat on your wife, you may cheat on somewhere else. Or your husband, you may cheat somewhere else. Now, if it's okay for you to cheat, it's okay for them to cheat. If it's okay for you to cheat, it's okay for them to cheat. So the control environment really is a matter of what role model are you setting out there? What are you putting out there? Are you putting out there that it's okay to cheat? Are you putting out there that it's okay to steal? You steal from the government? This is one of the reasons I hate tax cheats. Because you steal from the government, you will steal from me. All right? I cannot trust you. I cannot have a client who cheats on their taxes, even if I can't pinpoint the cheating. Right? I fire clients over that. I can't have that. Now, I can't have that for a number of reasons, but you can't have that either. So you must set an environment in your business, in your investing, that is one where there's no cheating, where cheating is punished, where cheating is not tolerated. Okay, there cannot be a tolerance. If you tolerate it, it will happen. If you tolerate it, it will happen. If you tolerate in yourself, it will happen with others, because you have no control over motive. And there are always going to be opportunities, right? Now, you're trying to minimize those opportunities through internal controls. That's how you're minimizing opportunities. So when we talk about protecting yourself from partners, this is really what we're looking at. We're looking at internal controls, we're looking at a control environment, and we're trying to prevent or protect the opportunity. So make sure they don't, as much as possible, they don't get the opportunity within reason, because we can never ever control their motive. We never know when their motive is going to change. Now, partners are even more difficult than employees, because partners do have control. And they do have access. And if they're a full partner, they probably need to have unfettered access. Because guess what? You are also their concern. You're also their concern. So again, control environment is critical there. How good of a partner are you? And how good of a partner are they? If they're a bad partner one way, I had a partner once that was just a bad partner. Well, it shouldn't have surprised me when he tried to steal from me, okay? In fact, I've had two partners that have stolen large amounts of wealth from me, okay? In both cases, they were stealing wealth through taking business, okay, that under agreement was not allowed for them to do. Okay, they had signed an agreement. So signing an agreement doesn't mean they won't steal from you. They will justify it. They will justify it. I had a partner who tried to steal a $1 million business from me. Now, they didn't get away with it, but in the end, it cost me $750,000. Okay, so in the end, it still cost $750,000. I had another partner successfully stole $350,000 and the court approved of it. So you cannot rely on a judge to take care of you, because judges might just say, well, you have money and they don't, so I'm going to give them money. Or a jury might say, juries are even worse, this guy has money, this guy doesn't, I'm going to give money from this guy to this guy. Because do juries have money? No. So we can't rely on the legal system to protect us from our partners. I think that is the hardest one to protect us from, our partners and frankly our employees. Now, if our employees flat out steal from us, but if our employees are just take business from us, they start a new business. I have a good friend who invented a certain way to market, invented it, had two employees that they thought were just phenomenal employees. And these employees went and started their own business, they'd signed a non-compete, they'd signed a non-disclosure, and they took the trade secret that my friend had invented. They did it themselves. My friend sued them, and they countersued. And yes, my friend's former employees won the lawsuit and actually won a judgment against my friend, even though my friend had invented the process and had a non-compete and a non-disclosure. So I'm just saying that the most important thing you can do is, I believe, that control environment. What's that relationship? I want to make sure that my employees and my partners are so well taken care of that they have no reason to steal from me, that they don't want to steal from me. And I don't do anything that gives them the idea that I'm cutting corners or I'm going to steal from somebody else or cheat somebody else. So I don't want to give them any form of rationalization. Now, they can come up with their own form, and they will. But I want to make sure that as much as possible, I am controlling that environment. And be careful if if somebody does steal from you, please do not delegate the responsibility of dealing with that person to somebody else. Okay? And then be upset when they don't do their job, whether it's an attorney, whether it's another employee or a partner. Be aware that you are responsible for your wealth. Okay? And the more wealth you have, the harder it is, because the bigger target you are. You will always be a target when you have wealth. And that is the fact of the matter. So we need to start getting used to that. We need to start from the very beginning setting ourselves up to protect ourselves. So how do we do that? And then how do we protect ourselves also from the predators out there? That's what we're going to talk about next. And we're going to talk about it in terms of entities. Entities are a form of ownership. Entities are a form of ownership. And there are several types of legal entities. And we're not talking about tax entities now. I want to be very clear. We have a whole course on taxation of entities. We are talking about legal entities now. As a legal entity, we have a sole proprietorship. My attorney friend, notorship, says that sole stands for someday you'll lose everything. Okay, we have a legal entity called a general partnership. We have another legal entity called a general partnership, called a limited partnership. We have a legal entity called a limited liability company. Limited liability, by the way, be very careful here with the words, company. It's not a limited liability corporation. I hear people say, I have a limited liability corporation, and all corporations have limited liability. Okay, so that's redundant. A limited liability company is a specific type of entity. And then we have corporation, which is a legal entity. Now, we have another quasi-entity that I'm going to leave to a different, we're going to discuss it, but I'm going to discuss it a little later, and that's called a trust. And a trust is a contract. Okay, it's a legal contract. And it's an entity from the standpoint of it's great asset protection, it's recognized by law, okay? It's not an entity from the standpoint that it's not something you file with the state, okay? It's something that is by contract, purely by contract. So I'm not going to talk about it in terms of the entities. I'm going to talk about it by itself. Now, a sole proprietorship, you're completely exposed. Someday you'll lose everything. You are completely exposed to predators. Somebody sues you, they get your business. Somebody sues your business, they get everything else you've got. All right, they have access to everything. So sole proprietorship provides no protection at all. Does not protect your wealth in any way, shape, or form. A general partnership is even worse than a sole proprietorship. And the reason is, Garrett calls these the good, the bad, and the ugly. Garrett's my friend, the attorney. And he calls these the good, the bad, and the ugly. And he's looking at these, he calls the good. This one he calls the bad, and this one is the ugly, the general partnership. And the reason it's ugly is because not only are you liable for everything you do, you're liable for everything your partner does. Now, the worst thing about a general partnership is you may be a general partnership and not know you're a general. You may have a partner and not know you have a partner, because a general partnership does not require a filing at the state. A general partnership can be a handshake. Let me give you an example. A general partnership is any time that you share net profits. So let's say that you hear people say the word joint venture. When you hear joint venture, think general partnership. As a general rule, a joint venture from a legal standpoint is a general partnership because you are sharing net profits. Let's say, for example, that you say, look, I'll put in the money and you go buy the real estate and manage it because you have experience. And we'll split the profits 50-50. What do we have? We have a general partnership. You are liable for everything they do. That you have a worker, you know, fall off a rafter on the site. You are personally liable for that, even though you're thinking, I'm just putting in the money. I have nothing to do with this. Well, guess what? You're a general partner. So you need to be very careful with that. If you're ever sharing profits, you need one of these good entities, okay? These are the good ones over here. So if you're ever sharing profits, you want one of these good entities because you don't want to be a general partner. That's the worst case ever. All right, now, limited partnership. A limited partnership is great. A limited partnership has at least one general partner and it has at least one limited partner. Now, if you're a limited partner, you don't have any responsibility. You're not at risk for anything more than your investment. If you're a limited partner, all you're at risk is for the money you put into the deal, right? You're liable for that, but you're not. Well, but what about the general partner? The general partner is still liable. Now, the general partner could be a corporation. It could be an LLC. So the general partner, there are ways to protect yourself in a limited partnership, but understand that a limited partnership does include at least one general partner. So limited partnerships are typically used in family situations where the parents want to be in control, but they don't want to own all the assets. Or they can, in some states, they're used for investing because the state doesn't treat limited liability companies well. Limited liability companies, we're going to see, are really good. Okay. Now, I'm going to skip limited liability now and talk about corporations. The purpose of a corporation, because corporations and limited liability companies are the two most common ways to protect your assets. So let's look at corporations. So the way a corporation works, let's say that this is you, okay, and you own your business and it is in a corporation. Now, somebody says, is it a C corporation or S corporation? It's irrelevant. That's a tax matter. We're talking about legal matters. Now, just to be clear, I'm giving you general education on legal matters. I am not giving you legal advice. I'm not qualified. I am not licensed to give you legal advice. This is general education, and everything I talk about, please talk to your attorney about it. Please go over it with your attorney. Okay, so let's say you form a corporation, and this is, by the way, this is all the stuff I learn when I attend classes and I take classes on asset protection. So I'm just passing on what I've learned. That's it. So here's you. You're the owner of this corporation. Okay, now somebody sues the business. Okay, so you have a lawsuit come in against the business. The purpose of the liability limitation of a corporation is it stops right here. Okay? This is called the corporate veil. Okay? This is called the corporate veil. And what it means is that we've got this veil here, and you can sue the corporation all you want. It's great. Okay, whatever. And the corporation might have to satisfy judgment. But if they don't have enough money to satisfy the judgment, they cannot come after you. Now, that's assuming that you've done your work and you performed all of your corporate formalities. And corporate formalities include such things as annual meetings, sorry about that, annual meetings. It includes minutes. Okay. It includes having your documents, right? Like your bylaws and your articles of incorporation. Issuing shares. Okay, that's something that a lot of corporations forget to do. Owners, is they forget to actually issue the shares. So you have to do all of these things, and you cannot, no commingling. This is the big one. So if you have the corporation pay a personal expense, you have commingled funds. If you take corporate money and put it directly into your personal bank account, you have commingled funds. So if you commingle funds, basically what you're saying is you're not respecting the corporate entity. If you don't respect it, the judge won't respect it. So what an attorney wants to do is they want to pierce the corporate veil. They want to pierce the corporate veil. And if they can pierce the corporate veil, then now they can get to your money. So you want to do, if you're going to set up an entity, then make sure that you follow all of the corporate formalities. And this is, by the way, true for limited partnerships and LLCs as well. Okay. Make sure you follow all of the corporate formalities and trusts, by the way, even trusts. You want to make sure that you follow these formalities. Now the trust formalities are different than corporate formalities, but make sure that you don't commingle, no commingling of assets, and treat the corporation with respect. Treat it with respect. That's a corporation. Now, what about if the lawsuit comes to you? What can they get? Well, they can actually get your shares. Nevada doesn't allow that to happen. Okay, Nevada, if you have two more shareholders, you cannot, they protect you from, they protect the corporation from anything you've done. All right. So there are states that do protect you. But for the most part, if you get a lawsuit there and you get a judgment against you, then they will get your shares. And if they get your shares, what can they do? They can liquidate the corporation, or they can just run the corporation. They can do whatever they want with the corporation because they have your shares. They actually own your shares. So you get protection at this level. You do not get protection at this level. So that's why corporations are frequently not used for small businesses, because there's too many possibilities that you're going to get sued and lose the business as a result. Now let's talk about the one that people use the most, which is a limited liability company. Again, this is a legal distinction. This is not a tax distinction. So in the tax law, there is no such thing as a limited liability company. So for tax purposes, what is it? It's whatever you choose it to be. So it can be a sole proprietorship if there's one owner. It could be a general partnership if there's two or more. It could be a limited partnership, depending on how the operating agreement is written. It could be a C corporation or an S corporation. The only thing it can't be is a trust. All right, so a limited liability company, we get to choose the taxation, which means you say, well, I want a corporation. I want a C corporation because I want that low tax rate that we have right now. Okay, well, that's okay. You can be a limited liability, be taxed as a C corporation. That would look like this. Here you are. And we draw that just so you know. You choose to work with one of our network members. We draw that as a triangle surrounded by a square. And that's to distinguish from a legal corporation. This would be a corporation that is a limited liability company, but being taxed as a corporation. Or if it's an S corporation, then we're just going to do this. We're just going to change that C to an S. So however it is, we're going to draw it that way. So triangles we use for LLCs and partnerships. All right, so we have to distinguish if it's a partnership and not an LLC. It's just rare that we see partnerships except for limited partnerships. We would never encourage a general partnership. So let's say you have a limited liability company. All right, let's say you have a limited liability company and you get a lawsuit here. You are protected generally just the same way you would be if you were a corporation. Now, state laws vary from state to state. So in your state, this is again, you need your team of advisors, and one of your advisors should be an asset protection attorney. So ask this question, okay? Which entity should I use in my state for this purpose? Because you might use a different entity for a family partnership than you use for your business. You may use the same. You may end up using a limited liability company for both. But you may decide that it may be because of whatever your business is or because of your family situation or the situation of your investments. You may decide it's a limited partnership and a limited liability company. It may even be a limited partnership and a corporation. All right. So it's different in every state. So make sure you sit down with an attorney and go through this. So generally, you also have this corporate veil. Right? You have this corporate veil in a limited liability company. The difference in a limited liability company is not only does it protect you this way, it also protects you this way. So if you get a lawsuit against you and you're sued, can they get the ownership, unlimited ownership of the limited liability company? And in most states, the answer is no. And if there's two or more owners, the answer is no in almost every, I think, as I understand it, in every state. So may not be the case, but generally speaking, if you have two or more owners, you're going to be protected on both a lawsuit against the company will protect you and a lawsuit against you will protect the company. So what happens is if they sue you and get a judgment, what they get is let's say they win a judgment, then they get a charging order against the income of your company, okay? They get a charging order against the income of your company. They do not get, assuming that you've set the company up right, they do not get to just run the company. Now, you can make, if your operating agreement, this is the key document. You have two key documents as a limited liability company. You have a articles of organization. And this is what you file with the state, articles of organization. You also have an operating agreement. And an operating agreement is how are you going to operate on a daily basis? Well, the operating agreement is critical to your asset protection. It's critical to your asset protection. You have two types of management. You have a member managed and a manager managed. You should ask your attorney which one is right for you. I personally prefer the manager managed. And the reason is because then I can make myself the manager. First of all, it makes it really easy to sign documents because they don't need all the members to sign. The manager can sign. Second of all, if I get a lawsuit, then I'm still the manager and I can determine, am I going to distribute income? So remember, the charging order is against income. Or really, better word for that is it's against distributions. So I may decide I'm not going to distribute. Okay? I'm not going to distribute. So I'm going to find another way to live. I'm going to take a salary, and they, you know, and in a judgment, the judge will never keep you from being able to live. So you ought to be able to live, and perhaps you can even starve them out. The most important thing to remember, though, is that when you get sued, you're probably being sued. It's not the plaintiff. It's not the plaintiff that you're most worried about. It's the plaintiff's lawyer you're most worried about. And the idea behind a limited liability company, even a corporation, but the idea behind protecting your assets through entities is you want to make it as hard as possible for the lawyer to collect their money. Because chances are, in the U.S. at least, and some other countries now have this as well, you're going to run up against a contingent fee. And a contingent fee means the lawyer puts out all the money up front, but they don't get paid unless they win. Well, if you can starve them out, you know, and they know that you can starve them out, then they're less likely to sue you. It's a little like you're out in the woods with your buddy and you run into a grizzly bear and the grizzly bear starts chasing you. You do not have to outrun the grizzly bear. You only have to outrun your buddy. The same is true when it comes to lawsuits. You put up all this protection and somebody sues, they're more likely to sue somebody who is weak than somebody who's strong. Okay. Or it's like if you have, you know, your house is in this neighborhood and you have all these locks and alarms. Does that mean that somebody can't get through those? No. But if your neighbor has no locks and no alarms, the burglar is more likely to go to your neighbor, right? You're just trying to scare them off. You're not going to have complete protection here. And let's say you do get sued, they're going to try to pierce that corporate veil. If you get sued in the business, they're going to try to break through here. If you get sued personally, they're going to try to break through here. They're going to work really hard on that corporate veil. So everything you can do to make sure that's clean. You have business reasons for doing what you do. You have business reasons for setting up the entity. You have tax reasons. You know, in the tax law, you have to have a business reason to do a transaction that helps you tax-wise. Okay, well, in the legal world, a tax reason is a good business reason to have that entity, right? So it works the other way too. So you must have a business purpose for this entity. That's why, you know, people ask me, well, should I put my personal residence in an LLC? I don't know the answer to that. You need to ask the attorney. To me, I'm going, what's your business purpose for that? But the only possible thing you can be wanting is asset protection. Is that enough? I don't know. It probably depends on your state, okay? And it probably depends on how many people own your house, you know? You and your wife or just you? You and your husband or just you? So I would sit down. These are the types of questions you want to ask your attorney. Now, there are higher levels of asset protection than entities, okay? There are higher levels of asset protection than entities. I just want to mention, I'm not going to go into detail in them, but I do want to mention a couple of ways to go even to more asset protection. And these are methods you're probably not going to use until you already have some assets. Now remember, you cannot protect yourself after the fact. So in other words, you can't go form an entity after you've already had a lawsuit or even after you've committed an act that was sued, that you were being sued over. So let's say that you're being sued in year three of your company, of your business, for something that happened in year one. Well, let's say in year two, you formed an entity. Well, guess what? You're not protected because the act happened in year one when you were not protected. So you really need to do this upfront. Tax and asset protection entity planning needs to be done upfront. If you didn't do it upfront, let's get it done as soon as possible. Okay, do not delay on this. Now, of course, there's another thing that I haven't talked about, which you're all wondering, why haven't you talked about this? And that's using insurance. All of the entities we've talked about, everything we've talked about is really just insurance anyway. Now, do you want insurance? Absolutely. Would you buy a house? Would you own a house and not put fire insurance on? Of course you would. Can you put fire insurance after the fire started? No, you can't. So you want to buy insurance. What type of insurance we buy is called an umbrella policy. Now, there are other policies that we may want to protect ourselves. For example, we might want a policy that covers employment issues. We might want a policy that covers, that literally covers, you know, fire insurance, et cetera. So we're going to still want those. But an umbrella policy is just like it sounds, okay? This is something that basically covers you, right? In case, you know, you're pretty much covering everything. That's what you're trying to cover. You're trying to cover everything underneath is what the umbrella policy is for. So always, always, if you're going to be an investor or a business owner, you must have an umbrella policy. The question of how much, I would discuss that with your insurance agent. All right, I would discuss with your insurance agent. It should be a minimum of $1 million, a minimum. Now, what's the biggest benefit of an umbrella policy? It's not the coverage. It's the legal. It's the legal assistance, because if you have an umbrella policy and it's covering a particular, let's say it's covering, a renter slips and falls, right? I had that happen, right? The renter said that they'd slipped and fall. They had a slip and fall. So what happened is my property manager got with my insurance company. The insurance company put their legal team on it. So what you're getting is the insurance company's legal team. The insurance company's legal team is better than your legal team, right? They do not want to pay out. So that's really what you're getting. That's the most important part you're getting with the umbrella policy. So whether it's 1 million or 2 million or 5 million or 10 million, that's a discussion between you and your insurance agent. It needs to be at least 1 million, in my opinion. Now, we talked about insurance. Insurance is not enough. You still need the entities, because you still don't want them to sue you, right? So if you have the entities, they're less likely to bring in a high-powered lawyer, because a high-powered lawyer goes, I want to get paid, and I don't want to go through 10 years of lawsuits to try to pierce the corporate veil. So you want to protect yourself with insurance and with entities. So let's talk about this higher level. The higher level, we have two. The higher level actually is a trust. This is, and there are just different types of trusts, but in some way or another, a trust is going to typically provide your highest level of asset protection. A trust is an agreement, a contract between three parties. The three parties to a trust are, one, the settlor, also called the grantor. This is the person who funds the trust. That's the person putting in the money. So if your mother set up a trust for you and she put the money in, or she put the assets in, then she's the grantor or the settlor. Number two is the beneficiary. And the beneficiary is whoever benefits. See, really easy terms to remember. Is the person who benefits from the trust. So they're the ones who are going to get the money, either the income or the assets, okay, in the end. They're the ones who benefit from the trust. So in that example, you would be the beneficiary. The third party is the trustee. Okay, so the beneficiary is the one who benefits. That one's kind of self-explanatory. The trustee is actually the person or the company, because a trustee can be a company, who owns and controls the assets. So they are technically the owner and they control the assets. Now, In that situation where your mother set up a trust for you and she was the settlor and you are the beneficiary, she's probably also going to be the trustee. If you do a living trust or a family trust, typically, which is a trust where you set up for yourself, okay, and you're setting that trust up, and we'll talk about that more when we talk about estate planning, but you set that trust up really to make life easier on whoever survives you so that all your assets are already owned by the trust and they don't have to go through probate and they don't have to go through who owns what. Okay, it's all settled. It's all settled. See, it's been settled by the settlor. So in that case, you set it up for yourself, and until you die, you're going to be the grantor, you're going to be the beneficiary, and you're going to be the trustee. So you're all three. All right. Now, there are tax consequences to all this, which we won't get into right now. So those are the three parties to that contract. That's what a trust is. Trust is a contract. All right. So let's look at different types of trusts. Okay. Number one, the most common type is called a living or family. It's the same thing. Just people, different people use different terms. Trust. That's the one we just talked about. The second one is what I would call, what we call a simple trust. And that one, all of the income is required to be distributed to the beneficiaries. It's very simple. Then we have what we call a complex trust. And a complex trust gives the trustee a lot of control. And a complex trust, they don't have to distribute all of the income. Now, a living or family trust is called a grantor trust. This is a for a grantor trust. And there's no asset protection to that. Okay? There's no asset protection in this trust because you settled it yourself for your benefit. As a general rule, there's no asset protection. Now, these trusts, normally there is great asset protection. So in other words, if your mother puts money in or investments into trust for you or your children or both, then if a creditor comes against you, they can't get that money. If they come against your mother, they can't get that money. So this is, trusts are actually historically the best asset protection vehicle. Now, there are a couple of trusts that are used specifically for asset protection. Now, these are all used for family purposes. And again, we'll talk about these more in other courses. The two types of trusts that are used for asset protection, one is called a domestic asset protection trust. Okay, or Domestic Asset Protection Trust, DAPT. Okay, it's commonly referred to by its acronym, DAPT. That is one, and what that is that's actually one where you settled it for your benefit. But there is a state law in the state in which you settled it. Now, preferably, it's the state you live in or have your assets in. But again, this is a more complex thing. The complexity of this trust is both from a tax purposes and from a legal purpose, and how you deal with it, it's way beyond the scope of this discussion today. So I just want to bring it up to your attention, make you aware of it, so that you know that when you're talking to your asset protection attorney, you can ask, well, what about a domestic asset protection trust? Does that make sense for me? And in many cases, it will. Alaska has them. Utah has them. There are several states with domestic asset protection trust laws, and some of them are very, very good. And this is a way to sock away some assets that you're not going to get. You don't need now. Okay. Again, when you put them in a domestic asset protection trust, this is money that you want to absolutely protect. The other one is what I would call a foreign. I'm just going to put asset protection trust, a foreign asset protection trust, which typically is frequently in the Cook Islands or some other jurisdiction where this is, they have really strict laws. So, for example, in the U.S., limited liability company law, historically the strongest laws are Wyoming. That's where limited liability companies were first create were first put into state into statute in the U.S. was in Wyoming, and Wyoming still has really strong laws because they don't have much else, right? They have minerals and cowboys, and they have good laws. So a lot of people form their LLCs in Wyoming. Well, the same is true for Cook Islands. They're not much there. I've been there. There is not much in the Cook Islands. This is the South Pacific. They don't have a lot. They don't have industry. The only industry they have really is tourism and the legal industry, the asset protection industry. So again, what you're doing is you're what we call importing the law, right? We're not actually putting our assets into the Cook Islands. There'd be nowhere to put them. What we're doing is we're actually just using their laws. So again, if you want stronger asset protection, you've gone beyond the regular trusts, you've gone beyond LLCs, and you're going, look, I want to have really good asset protection. Are they impregnable? Nothing is impregnable. Okay, nothing is impregnable. Will it make it a lot harder for lawyers to get at your assets? Absolutely. There is no question. Okay. The other thing you can do is you can actually put your assets overseas. So there are, particularly when you think of, you know, some certain countries in Europe like Luxembourg and used to be Switzerland. Now Switzerland has to share everything with the U.S. But there are several countries, Isle of Man. There are several countries, particularly in Europe, that allow you to protect your assets and actually have places for you to put them. So if you've got a bunch of gold and silver, or you want to put your cash or stock certificates or whatever other asset jewels, right, there are places you can put them that they are even better protected than if you use, say, a Cook Islands trust or a domestic asset protection trust. So there are these different levels, right? There are these different levels. And one thing we haven't talked about is what we call equity stripping, which is, I'm not going to get into that. Just know the equity stripping, I'm just going to write it up here. It's another one to talk to your attorney about. It's actually fairly complex to do it. So these are more advanced asset protection and not something that I'm really qualified to talk about. We do have attorneys that we can refer people to that do understand this stuff and do this. So if you're you become a client of one of our network firms, then we will, of course, share those references. So equity stripping, domestic asset protection, domestic asset protection trust, foreign asset protection trust, these are just more advanced types of asset protection. Remember, you are working really hard for your money. Just like if you are participating in the Wealthability courses, then it's probably that you decided to take responsibility for your own wealth. And you're not turning it over to somebody else because you can't abdicate. Well, you don't want to abdicate your responsibility for building your wealth. You don't want to turn that over to somebody else. Well, if you're taking that on, then you want to also protect it as you build it. The challenge is you must protect it before you build it. That's the challenge. Just like tax planning. You can't do tax planning this year for last year, right? Planning goes forward. So you have to do it now. So these are things that when you take advantage of them, there are so many. I hope what you've received from this course is an awareness. I understand that this is not real in-depth. It's probably more awareness than anybody's ever given you before. And once you're aware of something, you can do something about it. Once you're aware of something, you can do something about it. And when you do, you meet with your team. This is where your team, your tax advisor, needs to be involved in your asset protection, because what you do for asset protection is going to have a tax consequence. Okay? Your asset protection attorney, and you may have more than one asset protection attorney. You may have one that does all your domestic stuff. You may like LLCs and corporations. You may have one who does your estate planning, and you may have one who does your asset protection trusts. Okay, so you could even have three different attorneys. Don't be afraid of that. These are team members. They're there to help you. You find good ones, and you know, when we talk about team in our courses where we talk about teams, we talk about how to find people, And even in my book, Tax-Free Wealth, you can always go to chapter 23 because there's a lot of good information. Even though it's specific about finding a tax advisor, really you can use those principles for any advisor you're looking at. When you have the good team in place and you put these asset protection principles in place where they're best for you, okay? Not everything is good for everybody, but whatever is best for you, what's always going to happen is you're going to end up with way more money and way less taxes. We'll see you next time.